Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to R System Q1 FY24 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Giriraj Maheshwari. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Riya. I welcome all participants to R System Q1 FY2024 earnings conference call. We have today with us Mr. Nitesh Bansal, Managing Director and CEO, R System, and Mr. Nand Khazana, CFO, R System. We will start the call with opening remarks on the performance of the company by Nitesh, followed by financial overview by Mr. Nand. Thereafter, we will have a closer statement by Mr. Nitesh. Subsequently, we will open for a Q&A session. Before I hand over, let me read out the customary disclaimer statement on behalf of the company. Investors are cautioned that this presentation contains certain forward-looking statements that involve risk and uncertainties. The company undertakes no obligation publicly to update or revise any such statements. These statements may undertake revision because of new information, future event, or otherwise. Actual result, performance, achievement could differ from those expressed or implied in such forward-looking statements. With this, now I'm handing over to Mr. Nitesh for his opening comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Giri. Good morning. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining this call. For those of you who have access to the presentation, I will keep calling out the slide numbers as I refer to them. For those who don't, I'll anyway be covering the content of the slide. I'm on the agenda slide, and I'll be covering some of the key highlights, trends in operating metrics, etc., as we go through. And then Nand will cover the financial details for the reported numbers for the quarter. So coming to slide number 4, which is the key highlights, we reported a revenue of 4,166 million rupees, which is about $50.2 million, which is a year-on-year revenue growth of 3.1% and a year-on-year adjusted EBITDA growth of 10.4%. The net profit stood at 275 million rupees or $3.3 million. If you look at from an adjusted EBITDA margin perspective, we have gone from 15.4% EBITDA to 14.4%, and we have provided a bridge for it, which I'll just talk about. But on a year-on-year basis, gone from 13.5% EBITDA to 14.4% EBITDA, which is the improvement of 10.4% that we talked about. It is adjusted for the share-based payment expense for RSUs that we've rolled out to all the key employees in the company, the expense for which comes to about 65 million rupees, which is recorded post this adjusted EBITDA, adjusting for which the EBITDA will come to 535 million rupees or $6.4 million or 12.8% of the revenue. The bridge between Q4 to Q1 EBITDA, we have further improved our utilization and got advantage of higher billing days, resulting in 24 million and 16 million rupees, so overall 40 million rupees addition to the EBITDA in that sense. But we've also rolled out salary hike to our employees in Q1, which costed us 26 million rupees. And then there is a 57 million rupees impact of normal standard operations, which covers stuff from ramp-downs or project closures coming from the customers, as well as certain additional provisions for gratuity, etc., or provision reversals for which we had advantage in Q4. Net-net, 600 million rupees of EBITDA reported for the quarter. Moving to the next slide, looking at the trend, the 8-quarter trend for the revenue and EBITDA, starting Q2 22 to now Q1 24 across the 8 quarters, we've gone from 3,750 million rupees to 4,166 million rupees, which is a quarterly compounded growth rate of about 1.5%. In the same time, we've gone from 13.1% EBITDA to 14.4% adjusted EBITDA, which is, again, quarterly compounded growth rate of 2.9%, bringing our EBITDA to 600 million rupees. Overall, the quality of revenue has improved. Our focus on doing more with cloud, data, and AI, with leading our value propositions with cloud, data, and AI, has led to better quality of deals, which is what is reflected in the quality of revenue that we are reporting now. Moving to the operations metrics, which is slide number 6. There is no major change in revenue by geography, slight movement from 73.8 to 74.5% in North America, which is compensated by Southeast Asia and Europe going down from 13 to 12.2 and 10 to 9.8% respectively. Our client concentration largely remains the same. Our top client contributes 6.2%. Overall, top 10 clients contribute 22.7%, which has gone up from 22.3%. The mix has slightly changed over time. You know, two or three clients which fell off the top 10 list and new clients have taken their place. But overall, we remain, on one hand, we enjoy the loyalty of some of our large clients. On the other hand, we remain largely diversified, which has helped us with keep resilience during the last 4 to 5 quarters, as we have seen the market has been quite up and down. But because we are so spread out and have many clients to balance off, it has kept us very resilient. On utilization, our numbers have significantly improved and they've consistently improved over the last 3 to 4 quarters. We are now at a consolidated blended utilization of about 80%, which compared to 4 quarters ago was 75.8. So there is almost a 4% improvement in utilization. On DSO, we have largely been in the range, quarterly up and down, not taking into account. We reported a DSO of 62 days for the quarter ending March 24. Coming to some of the qualitative commentary on slide number 7, building for the future. Like I said last time, we are continuing to build our go-to-market motion. Our sales and delivery organizations have been reorganized in vertical lines, which has created a sharper focus on target industries. And these are industries where we have developed differentiated capabilities over the years. Also, as we had discussed last time, we have, during the quarter, rolled out focused account management for some of our key accounts. And this has been done under the leadership of our new Chief Customer Officer, Arun, who joined us in January this year. On offerings and positioning, which is a direct result of go-to-market, our offerings and solutions, new offerings and solutions have been rolled out on cloud platforms, which are both related to generative AI as well as smart manufacturing or AI for automation. These are, of course, you know, data, cloud, AI have been our areas of focus, and we've been rolling out newer offerings and solutions in that area. We have also been rated as major contender in the Everest Peak Metrics for Software Product Engineering Services. I've got a slide for that later, so I'll talk a little more about it. But this was the first ever Everest Peak Metrics we participated in. And we have been put in the company of a lot of notable peers. On the partnership front, we have increased our focus on the ecosystem play, on partnering with the other tech providers or tech product companies whose products we use and we implement. We are participating in events organized by those tech companies. We are showcasing our expertise in AI-powered intelligent integration and automation. And both with the two large hyperscalers, Microsoft and AWS, we have increased our traction. We now have 4 solutions registered on the AWS marketplace. And we are also jointly pursuing opportunities with Microsoft in the APAC region. On the leadership front, while this is post closure of Q1, but we've had a Chief Marketing Officer, Sanjay Sahai, who's joined us in April, and he will be bringing in a lot of marketing focus, both to elevate, both to focus on and elevate our brand, and of course, that would have an impact on our overall demand generation. Moving on to slide 8, some of the key wins that maybe I would like to highlight, which also denotes the nature of, you know, or the shift of business as it takes place. So we've been entrusted by a U.S. behavioral healthcare solution provider to set up a center of excellence for their product engineering and digital transformation needs. This includes data science and analytics to augment operational efficiency and value-based care. One of the leading fire safety solution providers in Canada has engaged us to develop a mobility app using .NET and other multiple platforms app UI. It is to help digitize their operations and enhance business efficiency. A US-based digital marketing solution provider has engaged us to upgrade their content management product. And this is actually not just upgrade, but also cloud-enabled. So this includes cloud migration, assisting in consolidating their engineering teams for product engineering and modern data platform / AI needs. One of the largest privately owned general insurance companies has engaged us to provide product engineering services to digitize their in-house products. And one of the leading distributors of live and frozen seafood in Singapore has engaged us to implement Microsoft Dynamics-based Business Central and CRM to optimize their end-to-end business processes, yielding financial visibility and operational excellence for the enterprise. So all in all, decent set of wins and good quality of revenue, which obviously is a leading indicator for sustainable revenue base that we are building up for the future. And these are all accounts which will definitely give us opportunities to mine them further and grow with them. At this point, I'd like to hand over to Anand for financial performance and contribution analysis. Over to you.
Thank you, Nitesh. Good morning to all. Thank you, everybody, for attending the call. I'll cover the financial performance, which those who are having the presentation is the last slide. The revenue for the quarter was rupees 416.6 crore or $50.2 million as against 416.3 crore or $50 million in last quarter and rupees 404 crore, that is USD 49.2 million same quarter last year. This is a growth of 3.1% year-on-year in dollar terms and almost flat quarter-on-quarter. Just to let you know that we are a calendar year company and this is our first quarter. The gross margin was 33.7% compared to 34% last quarter and 33.6% same quarter last year. This is mainly due to increase in average salary due to the increments kicked in this quarter as offset by higher utilization and billing days. SG&A expenses has increased by 3.4 crores from rupees 77.1 crore in Q4 to rupees 80.4 crore in this quarter. The adjusted EBITDA was 14.4% compared to 15.4% last quarter and 13.5% the same quarter last year. The company is able to expand sustainable operating margin to improve utilization. We have granted 53.5 lakh RSUs to the identified employees pursuant to the Management Incentive Plan 2023 as approved by the shareholders. As per accounting standard, we have booked an expense of rupees 6.5 crore on the RSUs. EBITDA post the cost of RSU is 12.8%. We are committed for profitable growth and continued our investment in sales engine, new technologies and innovation to deliver long-term sustainable growth. Getting down to depreciation and amortization, the total expense was rupees 16.6 crores compared to 16.9 crores last quarter. This includes rupees 6.2 crore approximate for intangible capitalized on account of Velocio and Scalework acquisition. Interest expense is rupees 2.8 crore compared to 2.9 crore last quarter. Other income was 2.3 crore compared to 1.5 crore last quarter. This quarter, we had an exchange gain of rupees 99 lakhs compared to exchange loss of 58 lakhs last quarter. Further, the other income comprised of interest income of 84 lakhs this quarter compared to 1.46 crore last quarter. This is primarily due to reduction in corpus post-dividend payment. During the quarter, the average rate for USD and Euro was 83.04 and rupees 90.14 respectively, as against last quarter average of USD and Euro of rupees 83.24 and 89.59 respectively. These are the two main currencies for our system. As at the year end, quarter end, we have total forward cover of $35.9 million with average rate of 84.21 and Euro cover of 2.2 million with average rate of 93.457, which we have already marked to market at closing date of 31st March. We have consistently followed this conservative accounting instead of parking such non-cash loss in balance sheet through hedge accounting. Our tax expense was rupees 8.9 crore this quarter as against tax of negative rupees 1.4 crore last quarter. Tax expense was negative in last quarter due to reversal of the tax provision of rupees 11.4 crores against dividend received from subsidiary company post-dividend declaration by the company. Effective consolidated tax percentage approximately 25%. Profit after tax and EPS net profit after tax was rupees 27.5 crore or $3.3 million compared to 45.9 crore or $5.5 million last quarter. Basic EPS for the quarter was 2.32 compared to 3.88 last quarter. With this, let me hand over to Nitesh for summing up.
Thank you, Nandri. So, summing up and looking ahead, the slide number 10 I'm referring to, or rather slide number 9 I'm referring to. Our own focused account management approach, as I talked about, we're beginning to see some results from it in form of increased client traction, and there is a proactive deal pipeline that is getting generated through that. This is obviously leading to more meaningful relationships with those clients. We've also signed a strategic partnership with IIT Delhi. This is something we did in January, or rather February this year, to create a joint COE for research towards applied AI and sustainable solutions. IIT Delhi, as we all know, is a premier institute in India, and they have a dedicated artificial intelligence department. And being close to us from Noida, it makes a lot of sense for us to collaborate with them. And this is a joint center of excellence where we get access to their latest research, as well as most of the PhD students, as well as their faculty members, to work together with us on joint projects of interest. Trends that are shaping 2024, and as we know, 23 has been quite an interesting year. Lots of things happening around the world, both on geopolitical as well as on business front. As we see, as we've gone into 2024, we are seeing that there's still an increased focus on India as an offshoring destination, where clients are choosing options like setting up captives or partnering with service providers, and quite often both, because a lot of clients do not want to have a complete fixed cost base, even if it is in a low-cost geography. So while it creates some competition, but it opens up new opportunities, new avenues of opportunities for us as well. Generative AI, from being obviously the fascination and talk of the town, it's also getting embedded into the software lifecycle, changing the ways that we develop software. We ourselves, at our systems, we have rolled out co-pilot trainings and licenses to our workforce to stay both in touch and ahead of the trend to the extent possible. While there are sectoral nuances with some evergreen sectors like tech, media, telecom, health, etc., or BFS, sometimes being slow, but we have a very balanced portfolio across multiple verticals, and that has helped us keep resilient through those times when some sectors have slowed down, other sectors have picked up, and hence we stay resilient. And we are optimistic on the market sentiment improving in the second half of this calendar year. In fact, from the deal activity, as we see, we are seeing green shoots of things picking up, both in terms of the deal sizes, as well as these, you know, the duration that customers are taking for the decision making. And I'll come to the last slide on the Everest Peak metrics. So this is the, as we talked about, this is the Everest Group Peak metrics, software product engineering services assessment of 2024, where we've been placed amongst the major contenders, which is, if you are referring to the slide, we have put a green box over there to show where our system is. The assessment obviously is a fairly rigorous assessment done by, you know, Everest Group, and according to them, they have highlighted some of the key strengths that we need to obviously, you know, hone in and continue to stay focused on. So what Everest has also highlighted is we have a balanced portfolio across buyer sizes and geographies, that we have a strong partner ecosystem comprising hyperscalers, data engineering partners, and enterprise technology providers, that we have, we are amongst the few firms who have a dedicated service for private equity firms, and we have the willingness to engage in emerging deal constructs. And in their own research and talking to our customers, they have heard client appreciation and feedback for our technical expertise, effective project management practices, and proactiveness in pitching innovative solutions. So I think it's a good reaffirmation of what we believe our core strengths are, what we stand on, and we stay committed to building on these and deepening our relationship with the client for the future. That's really what I had in form of presentation. We would definitely be open for questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Harsh Chaurasia from Vallum Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. So I have two questions. From last 5 quarters, we have seen decline in on-site employee. But in the current quarter, there was on-site employee addition. And at the same time, the North American region grew both on a Q-on-Q and a Y-on-Y basis. So are we seeing some green shoots in the region from both direct channel as well as the private equity channel? And my second question would be, in the last quarter in the call, you mentioned we have built up a strong sales funnel. And even in this quarter press release, we have mentioned like the sales funnel is quite strong. So where are we in terms of the stages, like the early stage, mid stage, or the later stage, where our sales funnel getting converted into the deal wins? So these are my two questions.
Thank you, Harsh. Thanks for those questions. No, I think your observation is right. Last 5 quarters, we've seen decline in the North America onshore, which is also very directly, I think, a reflection of the tech landscape in North America with significant layoffs across tech companies, etc., who happen to be our customers in many cases because we serve the tech ecosystem. The increase in North America this quarter largely is from the direct sales channels because we did win a significant deal with the California state government. We've also won a few more deals where the projects are being done on a on-site and offshore mixed mode, which required some more onshore presence. So those are good green shoots, like you said. Yeah, they are green shoots of you know, both emergence in terms of new demand, as well as a little bit of opening of spending in the North American tech sector or largely in the North American region. I would wait another quarter before calling it a secular trend, but the green shoots are definitely positive and we are excited about it. On your second question on strong sales funnel, I still stand by that Q Q4, when we presented, we talked about a strong sales funnel. We have executed on that. Our result may look like flat from Q4 to Q1, but, you know, that's a net flat, which contains, you know, the some effect of whatever ramp downs were already known, et cetera, versus all the stuff, all the business that we have won. From a decision-making cycle perspective, I think, we were expecting a much faster decision-making cycle in Q1. We did not exactly get that. So the funnel has stayed strong. It is a mid to late stage funnel, but the decisions have taken longer. So, we have not lost deals, just that the deals which could have started off in January, maybe started off in March, or maybe are starting off in April. So we are seeing some delay, but that funnel is building up. It is, both in terms of, you know, average deal size, I'm positively enthused by it, and also, from the perspective that these are good quality revenue, type of deals, that we are looking at.
So, if I may ask, so, have we, like, addressed, like, made the addressable market for Blackstone private equity channel? Like, what are we looking at the, like, where we can provide our capabilities? What are the number of clients we are looking to pitch, and what would be the addressable market for Blackstone channel?
So, Harsh, Blackstone has, you know, has been a fairly good channel or active hunting ground for us. We have been part of that portfolio now for 3 quarters or 9 months. And during this time, we have already started working with or getting revenues from over basically a double-digit number of clients, I would say. From a prospecting or reaching out perspective, I think there is, you know, 40 to 50 clients within Blackstone portfolio that we have access to. But again, you know, individual Blackstone companies will make their own decisions based on their own spend cycles, et cetera. So we remain, you know, we are definitely getting that traction. We are taking advantage of that access. And it is a very active channel for hunting for us. And it has been quite positive for us so far.
Thank you. Just last question, if I excuse me. So basically, it's a data regarding question. Earlier, we used to provide the repeat business. Now, like, we have stopped providing the data points. So what would be the repeat business for this quarter? Same data point for last quarter and the year before.
So at least in the last 2-3, you know, investor calls that I've been part of, we haven't focused on repeat business. But having said that, and right now I don't have the numbers, direct numbers or exact numbers in front of me, but given my sense of the business on a rough order of magnitude basis, we still get close to between 85 to 87% of our business from repeat customers. We do have, because we are dependent on, or because we do a lot of discretionary work, we open quite a good number of new clients each year. So about 10 to 12% of our revenue does come from new customers, but 85 to 88% would definitely be repeat business consistently.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for providing this opportunity, and all the best for the future.
Thanks, Harsh.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Yash from Avigra Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Yash.
You have been adding team members in the top and upper middle management level. Where are you in that journey? Are these investment or gaps in this space filled, or there is more to go?
So, Yash, so far we've added basically 2 team members in the upper management level, the Chief Customer Officer and Chief Marketing Officer, which basically have been a Q1 and a Q2 addition for this year. We did not make any major addition or change to the senior team. Actually, we have not made any changes. These are only additions, but we did not do anything last year of that kind. These are gaps that we have identified as a result of our strategy exercise that we did in Q4 last year, where we identified certain gaps not having chief marketing officer was a clear gap. Not having anybody running the account management or farming function was a clear gap. So we filled those. We will continue to invest in bringing some focused talent around sales and marketing, because we have promised we will continue to invest in sales and marketing as we develop our go-to-market motion. So those would be more middle, middle tier talent, not at leadership level. So it will continue. You will see some additions happen as we go across during this year, because clearly it takes time to identify talent, bring them on board, and by the time they join. But I do not see, it is an ongoing exercise. I think your question was, are we going to see more during the coming quarters? The answer is yes. We will see a few more coming during the quarters.
So as you are in the investment phase currently, and with the demand remaining subdued over next for the next 6 months, so how do you see the movement in the margin for the medium and long term?
So I think last quarter also I had addressed this question. We are phasing out this investment in a manner that we can keep pace with the growth of the business, and so that we continue to deliver margins pretty much in the range that we have been managing. So our whatever margin expansion we are able to do may get offset by some of the investments we make. There might be, again, seasonality across quarters, which may be a few basis points here or there, but we are not indicating any massive margin dilution because of the investment, because we are phasing out the investment along with the business growth.
So you cannot give a number, right?
Well, like I'm saying, I mean, we will continue to report or continue to maintain our margins at current levels. We will expand on margins through operational efficiencies. We'll invest them into the investments that we are making. So if we are currently at the 14-point levels, our endeavor is that we continue at those levels.
Okay, and can you speak about the organic growth for CY23 and Q1? That's all.
CY23
and, yeah, this current quarter.
Okay. So, look, CY23, we saw our numbers largely remain flat, okay? And this was a combination of, we did acquire Velocio Technologies middle of the year, and then at the same time, the market has also kind of, taken a turn. But overall, we combined the Velocio Technologies with our business. And as a result, as a whole, we have continued to stay moving in the positive territory. There has been some churn in the business. There has been some impact to our traditional business, which went down. So organically, in CY23, we did see a slight amount of degrowth, which was offset through our acquisition of Velocio. CY24 or Q1, that trend has, sort of flattened out, and we are seeing a positive impact coming towards the future. We are seeing positive organic growth. Hopefully, in the next two quarters, we will start seeing both quarter-on-quarter, year-on-year positive organic growth impact as well. It will be difficult to make out because Velocio has been fully integrated, so the numbers won't be available separately. But I'm sure, you guys, since you do a lot of analysis, you will have a sense of how it is, coming through in the numbers.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Abdul Kadir Raja from Ratnabali Investments Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, sir. Just a couple of questions. So in the last few calls, you had mentioned that the Velocio has a quarterly run rate of roughly $2.3 million. So just wanted to understand, is this run rate being maintained with a 30% EBITDA margin?
So, Abdul, I don't think we have given a quarterly run rate for Velocio in any of the calls. And, so I wouldn't go into the exact number of what is Velocio's quarterly run rate. But having said that, what I have definitely said, and I'll repeat and reiterate now, is that Velocio has been both growth and margin accretive for us. So, they have, now that that business is integrated with ours, we have seen that bring positive growth momentum to our overall business and to the portion of business which we execute out of Pune, we have actually managed to extract better margins. So it has been margin accretive as well, right? So, since we are not reporting separately, it will be very difficult to put a finger at saying exactly how much is Velocio. But from a people utilization and growth of the center and growth of the services perspective, it has, I have absolutely no doubt in saying it has positively grown and been both growth and margin accretive for us.
Okay, sir. So the next would be, we have a sales target of roughly $1 billion to achieve in, say, the next, 4, 5, 6 years. So I just wanted to, if you have narrowed down any acquisition target. So I don't want any details, but are we on track or have we, found out the target company which we can acquire? Just any thoughts on that?
Abdul, we are very active players in the market from an acquisition perspective. Every month we probably do at least a couple, if not, four or five, due diligences. Or due diligence is probably much later, but at least the initial, discussions with potential targets. And being part of a Blackstone portfolio company, we have the advantage of having an extremely large, ecosystem of acquisition that kind of acts on our behalf. We have access to a lot of bankers and other players in the industry. So our funnel for potential acquisition targets is extremely rich. We are, of course, being, conscious and cautious in terms of where we spend our bandwidth, how many we are able to kind of look at in detail, and what suits our kind of growth thesis. So that way, yes, we're constantly looking. They are in various stages. And as soon as we find where it's both the meeting of the objectives, the growth thesis, the value it offers, and the right price to acquire, then we will be in a position to probably make an announcement whenever it happens.
Okay. Thank you, sir, and all the best for the future.
Thanks, Abdul.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Praveen from LIC. Please go ahead.
Sir, I would like to know how is the telecom sector helping the company's growth? In this, especially after the Vodafone public issue.
So, I'm sorry, I was hearing a ringtone, but Praveen, thank you for the question. So telecom has been a core sector for us, and it has been, something that differentiates us in the market, because product engineering for telecom requires both specialized skills and deep programming knowledge, which thankfully we are able to demonstrate and do. The customers that we work for, Praveen, are mostly the technology providers for telecom companies and the core OEMs who the telecom companies use to build their tech stack, right? So we are not so much exposed to the service providers themselves, the likes of, Vodafone, T-Mobile, or, AT&T, etc. But we are working with the technology providers who actually provide the core stack on which their telecom works. So we're working with the likes of Nokia, or we're working with other such core providers. So for us, the telecom market is less impacted by what happens to or how the, again, there are merger situations happening between telco operators around the world. We are less impacted by that, but we are more impacted by the general spend by those operators on technology, right? And which, if you look at in the last 4 or 5 quarters after the 5G spectrum, a lot of operators have spent a lot of money on 5G spectrum. They are struggling to monetize, and that has resulted in some amount of tech spend squeeze of what these operators spend on technology or refreshing their technology, etc., which has some impact on us. But we have, because we are working on core products, it's also a fairly resilient spend. So we have not grown significantly in telecom space, if you know, because that's how the market is. But our business is very sticky, and we are continuing to stay with our customers because we are core to them. And telecom is not a standalone market. We work with telecom and media and entertainment companies. Some amount of media and entertainment spend is something that we have taken advantage of. And that's also something that was one of the reasons for acquiring Velocio, because they also have a strong media offering. So that has helped us in overall keeping the market rounded up and taking advantage of it.
Thank you, sir. Sir, one more question. Hello?
Yes, sir. Yeah, please.
Sir, you have been giving good dividends for the past 2 years. Can we expect a bonus issue?
Praveenji, this is something that is obviously a board decision on how we appropriate, and this is part of our capital appropriation policy. We stay committed to returning back our reserves and the shareholders' profits back to the shareholders in one form or the other, whether it goes in form of dividend, bonus issue or anything of that sort, is a decision that's probably taken at that point of time. I do not know if the precedence, if there has been any. Nanji, you want to maybe comment on that?
So, see, these are, as of, we have never issued bonus in the past, but I think, as of now, there is no such plan. Whenever there is any such thing, we will inform the stock committees.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nikhil from S&P Family Office. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. So my first question is, we are trying to grab the larger clients. So are we planning to underbid to grab them? And my second set of question is, what is the growth rate in ACV and TCV? And what is the contribution of Blackstone portfolio companies in ACV and TCV? Hello?
So, no, I heard your question. I was just making my notes so that I don't miss out on any part of the question. So on bidding for larger value clients, are we underbidding or are we taking a margin impact to win those customers? The current answer is no. But again, this will, just to be completely honest, Nikhil, depending on the nature of the deal, we might take those calls from time to time. So far, we haven't, because the nature of work that we are still winning is in premium digital skills and services, cloud, data, AI, etc. And customers who are investing in those areas are, at least our experience so far has been, they're not penny pinching. They are building something which is strategic to them. So we are able to get the rates we normally command and we deserve. But tomorrow, if we do get larger, long-term, sustainable revenue, we will obviously try to stay competitive to the market to win such business. But, that's for future to tell. On growth rate on ACV and TCV wins, I don't think we track it in terms of terms of growth rate of TCV wins on a quarter-to-quarter basis. But having said that, since we did put a new go-to-market motion in place, we are tracking the number of deals over a certain size that we win. And there, like I've said, you know, we've seen very positive movement where our, you know, deals which are, you know, above $1 million in ACV or above $2 or $3 million in ACV or beyond have continued to grow consistently quarter on quarter. Contribution of Blackstone portfolio, again, we don't, you know, again, that's a split we don't report as a percentage. But like I mentioned to another question, I think Harsh had asked earlier, was we are already working with double-digit number of Blackstone clients. And, you know, we are we have made significant headway with those customers, with some of those customers actually crossing $1 million revenue with us already. And we have significant runway in terms of where we have in the pipeline over 30 to 40 other Blackstone portfolio companies that we are prospecting with.
Sir, so my next question is, like, margins in the IT services business have improved drastically. Like, there's a good improvement in the margin. So are these sustainable margins? And what are the margins we are going to see, sustainable margins going ahead?
So, we believe that the margins that we are currently operating at are sustainable, and we are quite confident that we will be able to continue to report these margins even after some of the investments that we are embarking upon, that we are making both in, you know, sales and marketing improvement and our go-to-market motions. So yes, short answer is these are sustainable margins. Nanji, you want to add anything to that?
Sure. See, I think Niteshji has already answered. We feel that these are sustainable margins, and by growth, you know, operating leverage will play in. Also, you know, there is a lot of thrust on improving utilization. So we are confident of not only maintaining, but slight improvement in margin as well.
Okay, sir. That's it from my side. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Vinay Menon from Monarch Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you so much for this opportunity. So I have a few questions. One is, sir, over the last few quarters, you've been talking about the funding issues for, you know, especially U.S. tech companies and startups. So what is the update over there? And if you can just provide, like, you used to provide a breakup between, you know, tech, BFSI, telecom. So if you can provide that also, that number, that would be great. Thank you.
So the funding issues for U.S. tech companies, startups, et cetera, is quite public knowledge. I mean, if you look at any of the reports published, the total funding for the tech sector in general, and I'm not going to single out startups in there because these are, you know, some of these fundings are for larger enterprises as well who are dependent on external borrowings or private equity investments. But the net funding has gone down significantly, and there is, you know, still there are lots of companies who are seeing their funds dry up. And this is, and it's not just in US alone. I think we've seen that phenomena across the world. Though we are exposed more to US because our 72-73% of our business comes from US. That's why we see it in our reports. But it's true across the world, where most equity firms, whether venture capitalists or private equities, have started asking their investment companies to focus on fundamentals, to report, you know, to report a real, you know, annual revenue run rates as well as margins, versus what was a very buoyant market up to 2021-22, where funding was A, the funds were available for cheap and funding was being provided for investment in technology and growth of subscription rather than the real revenue and margins. So that situation, I think, is still true. It hasn't, at least so far, there is no immediate sign that it has, that situation has reversed or reversal is happening. But we hope that with stabilization of the interest rates and hopefully reduction on interest rates in a few quarters from now, maybe the situation could change. Then, okay. Coming to Nanji, you want to talk about any split? Because again, I do not think we were reporting the split across sectors, but you have some comments to make on that.
So broadly, tech and telecom put together comprise of, close to 50% of our revenue, and BFSI around 11-12%. That's the broad breakup. I think we report in our annual report, so you can refer the broadly, the category is same.
Okay. And just one more question, Manji, if you can answer. So you have mentioned that about, I think, in the last few, last call you had said that 12 crores will come as a tax write-back because of the funding which you got, from your U.S. subsidiary, which you had used for the Velocio acquisition. So that is the same 12 crores which you have mentioned for Q4 2023?
Yeah, I mean, I have explained that the tax impact is because of that 12 crore benefit which we got. Yeah, that's right. We have given the form of a note. That's right.
Okay. And one last question, if there is time, sir. Sir, what kind of, revenue growth are we targeting, for our systems over the next few years? If you could possibly give any guidance, that would be great, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't provide guidance, but we have consistently maintained that we are tracking ourselves closely with the industry and industry peers. And our ambition, our goal is to grow at least faster than the industry average and hopefully, at par with some of the best performing players in the industry. But this has been a very dynamic cycle. So getting that predictability is very important for us. But we certainly will continue to track ourselves with industry averages, and we will grow faster than industry average is something that I'm very confident of saying.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. If there is any way to reach you all, because we just wanted to know a bit more, so if you can let me know that if there's any way I can contact you after this, then that would be great for some offline questions.
Sure. Nanji, our investor relation contacts are provided with this. So please do feel free to reach our investor contact team.
I have my email address in the press release. Do write to me and we'll answer your questions.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ravi Anand from Incred Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Sir, I have a few questions. Am I audible? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
The first question is on growth. Sir, this quarter has been kind of a flattish quarter. Last quarter was obviously seasonally weak. And prior to that, we had one-offs and the ratio acquisition. And prior to that, three quarters were kind of 1% CTGR kind of stuff. So we understand that the industry is going through some headwinds. So are we guiding that our growth will be kind of in line with looking at the past 5-6 quarters, and that our growth in the next few quarters will be in line with the industry, because that is what the data is suggesting. And if I just want to add to it, We mentioned that this quarter there was some impact on growth because of rationalization of a certain account. So would just want to understand, had this rationalization not been there, what would have been a normal growth? And what would that growth be coming from? Would it come from mining of existing clients or hunting of new clients may be added by that?
Sorry, Ravi, what was the question around rationalization? I lost your voice a little bit over there.
Yeah, so we mentioned that the growth during the quarter was muted. One of the reasons was that we had to cut down the smaller account, if my understanding is correct. Or maybe rationalization.
No, we haven't deliberately cut down on any smaller accounts or rationalized. What I'd mentioned was that there has been, you know, continued churn of some customers, which, like I think the earlier caller Vinay had also asked about, that, you know, there has been, in our business, because of discretionary spend, there is a certain amount of business that will naturally come to an end because the project gets over, right? And then there are the longer term R&D investments, which we are part of because we develop products for our customers, which are dependent on the R&D budgets of the customers. And in the last two or three quarters, due to some of those funding issues, et cetera, that we talked about earlier, we have seen some of our customers, you know, shut down on those initiatives, which creates ramp downs for us, right? So those have been the, you know, the ramp downs or churn that we've seen. On the other hand, we've continued to win new business to compensate for that ramp down and churn and kind of, you know, build up both revenue base for the quarter and pipeline for the future to kind of continue to grow upon it. So, yeah, I mean, there was no rationalization of customers deliberately done from our side, but, you know, that's a natural churn that we have seen. But go ahead with your question. I mean, there was some other part to the question as well.
Yeah, so just to, in continuation with this, so this will be a natural phenomenon every quarter. So in context of this, what can we estimate as a, you know, especially the given that the industry is going through headwinds, what would be a, I'm not asking for a explicit guidance, but a range of growth guidance, maybe between 10 to 15, something like that.
So, Ravi, your first question was, is our growth largely tracking the industry, and is, at any point are we going to break away from it? Are we going to grow much faster than it, right? So, currently, yes, we are largely tracking the industry. In fact, depending on which statistic you see, across some of our larger peers, mid-cap peers, or small-sized companies like us, we are probably slightly better off with most of the companies having somewhere, you know, given muted results, negative growth trajectories, etc. But yeah, we are still largely, you know, subject to the kind of industry trends currently. With the investments we are making in account management, in mining function, etc., we believe first it will help us, you know, solidify our positions with the accounts, which means bring more predictability in our revenue, and then eventually may contribute and will, I mean, I'm confident it will, but, you know, I'm just projecting in the future whether it will happen in 3 quarters or 4 quarters or it will take longer, when it can start giving us that additional growth trajectory where we can break away from the industry trend, right? Our new account acquisition engine has been one of the strengths. We will continue to leverage that. We will continue to acquire new accounts. So the growth will come from a combination of new accounts and existing. We would like to see to increase our predictability if the dependence or if the contribution of the new accounts could come to 10% or below. That would just improve our productivity and efficiency. But, you know, we are happy with the new accounts coming in because It gives us exposure to new customers. And being in product engineering and R&D, we do need that fresh infusion so that we are constantly working on the latest products and the newest technologies. Right. So that combination will continue. Right now we are tracking the industry and we are staying above the average, but we will break free at some point of time. And yes, churn will remain a natural phenomena, but industry has a role to play because the churn was not that high, you know, 3 or 4 quarters ago. We have seen it become very high. We hope it stabilizes. Typically, our business is more sticky business than generic IT services because R&D investments are made for several years. Products continue to stay in development and new features keep getting added over and over time. And that's how we have maintained, you know, very long-term relationships with our clients. If that churn reduces and the R&D investments become more stable, we will definitely see that translate into positive growth for us.
Right, sir. Sir, my second question was on margin. So as we build a team, the RSU costs will be there. Maybe it's not a even phenomena, but we will continue to invest in SG&A as well. As you mentioned that the margins are sustainable and it might improve going ahead. But if I look at the segmental table, so the information technology services business is generating EBITDA less than 10%. Most of the margin is coming from the business process outsourcing services. And obviously, utilization is one of the levers. But how do we see this margin on a more longest term sustainable basis?
So I'll definitely ask Nanji to also comment on top of what I say. But broadly speaking, Ravi, our business mix, at least for the foreseeable future, and we haven't forecasted for 5 years out, we are forecasting only 1 year or 18 months, we see our business mix remaining largely similar. And with a similar business mix, we should be able to deliver a similar margin, a margin profile. When we are making more investments in, you know, sales and marketing, like I've answered earlier, we will be compensating that through our both, you know, business growth as well as some amount of, you know, efficiency levers that we will bring in so that we don't dilute our operating margin from that, you know, that significantly. Like I said earlier also, there might be a few, you know, 10, 20 basis points dilution seasonality that may happen because sometimes when you hire someone, when you bring someone on board, it may be a step ahead of when the growth came in or margin expansion happened or later. So that may create some seasonality. But broadly speaking, we are in that sustainable range. And you had some point about RSU cost. You know, this RSU cost is, you know, for bulk of the people or, you know, that have already been covered. If we do hire some more people, and you know, that will be 1 or 2 people coming in who might be then be given RSUs at the time of joining. The total cost impact of that spread over, you know, the 7 years duration as it is spread over will not be significant on any quarter from a cost of RSUs perspective. At least that's my sense of it. Nanji can maybe throw more color at it.
Sure, I think you have answered it correctly. So, because most of the, you know, employees are already covered in that. And just to answer your question on the split between IT service and business versus outsourcing, 91% of business comes from IT services. So, whatever the margins are, you know, these are more or less from IT services. The slight 9% portion come from business process outsourcing services, where the margins are a bit higher because the kind of work we do. But again, the 91% business is IT services. So, you know, so most of the profit is coming from that services only.
Got it, sir. Thank you, sir. If there is any question, I'll come back offline.
Sure. And now we already 5 minutes have exceeded the time. How many still questions are unanswered? Operator, can you tell us?
Sir, it's two.
Okay, Niteshi, we can call quickly. Let's talk quickly. We can do it quickly, please.
Sure. Next question is from the line of Gokul Maheshwari from Avigra Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Sir, technology is changing very rapidly with AI coming in. In that context, any parts of the business where you feel worried that is prone to some level of disruption, or would you be on the right side of the disruption, if you could comment on that?
No, thank you for that question, Gokul. I think I've covered in my presentation that AI obviously is both is a very large opportunity for us, but it also poses some amount of threat to those who are not ready, right? And the threat is not in terms of, loss of jobs or loss of positions or anything. It's just that the customer expectation will shift over time. They will expect that the work is done in the most efficient manner, leveraging technology to the extent possible. Since we work on a lot of, large part of our work is product R&D related work, where we are developing products of the other companies who are product companies. They actually do not want their products to be developed, using AI technologies, because they are writing code for high efficiency and specialized code and functions to deliver that special functionality. So quite often our customers do not want that to be included. But then there are functions in the software development lifecycle when it comes to testing, automation testing, when it comes to, doing certain amount of data simulations and all those things, where AI can be very useful. So what we have done is we have already rolled out Copilot trainings to our staff. We have also rolled out licenses to our people, to the workforce, where they can start experimenting and using in their day-to-day work. They become used to working together with Copilot and start, looking at what kind of suggestions can come from AI, which can actually provide them efficiency and better mode of working. So one, our business as compared to, let's say, some other businesses which might be more in terms of support maintenance or testing or some of the other generic ID services oriented, our business is actually less impacted because of being core R&D. But even though it is the case, we are being proactive and we have identified the need and we have already taken steps to get our workforce, up to speed on the latest technologies, including generative AI, for software development.
Great. And when you mentioned about the fact that the industry is going through some amount of a challenging time because of the macros, but over a 3 to 5 year basis in your core segments, what would be the expectation for the industry growth?
You obviously have been watching the market more than I have. For the last 4 quarters, everybody in the industry has been talking two quarters, right? And that 2 quarters has been kind of moving forward every quarter. So, the honest truth is very difficult to say. Also, this is an election year in, half of the world. Basically, all the major democracies are going through election, and there's also a European election. So all the, European Union election is also happening this year. So there is, I am seeing in my own little world, I'm seeing optimism in terms of people are beginning to spend, budgets are beginning to open up. Some decisions which were stuck for some time are beginning to come through. This is as of last month. If this trend continues, I will feel a lot more positive and optimistic about this year, which I am, honestly. But to be able to say how fast the industry will grow, what the growth trend would look like over the course of next 3 to 4 years, anybody's guess. My hope is that industry will get back to its growth trajectory next year. Second half of this year will be the uptake. Next year it will be back to its growth trajectory. And I think the consumption need of the industry, or the tech consumption need, is so high that, expecting a you know, 10, 12 or 15% growth from there on should be possible, because that's what the world needs to consume. But again, you know, going by the last 3 or 4 quarters of 10, I would not, you know, put it in very definite terms. I mean, that's, I'll keep my fingers crossed, and I wish that would happen.
Great, thank you. Last question on the employee front. What are you looking to add in terms of number of people? You have around 4,100 odd employees.
So you mean where, in which areas? We are.
So in terms of which areas and the quantum, if there are any plans which you have put in place on a net basis?
So our plan to hire would be in line with our, you know, as we look at our quarterly growth projections, because we don't hire freshers, right? So we don't have an intake of, you know, college intake where we would make advanced plans to say this year we are going to hire, you know, whatever 500 freshers or something who we will train for next 6 months to make them ready for workforce. We mostly, you know, use talent who are with us when they come off projects, or we hire ready talent from the market in the, you know, 2+ years, 3+ years experience categories, all the way up to, you know, 10, 12, 14, 15 years experience people. So our hiring plans are in line with, you know, as we see the forecast for the quarter. Areas that we are definitely, you know, investing in, and we are, you know, actively hiring, and because that's where we are also seeing demand, like I said earlier, is data, AI, cloud, plus Salesforce. And those have been areas of consistent demand and consistent growth. So those will continue to remain our focus to hire.
Great. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, That was the last question of the day. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nitish Bansal for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Nanji, can you hear me?
Sure. Yeah, we can hear you. And before, Nitish, you close, you know, thank you for everybody's interest. If anybody has any question, you can write to me. My phone number and email address are at the end of the press release. You may write to me. Nitish, you may please close. Hello?
Yes, sir, you're audible.
No, I'm asking Niteshji to close the meeting. Give a closing remark.
Nitesh, sir, I guess disconnected.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Thank you for attending the call. Thank you for your interest.
Thank you. On behalf of our systems, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.